Let me now introduce Dr. Gar Alperovitz, who will speak on system-wide change in the era ahead. He is a historian, a political economist, an activist, and an author. Dr. Gar Alperovitz is co-chair of the Next System Project and co-founder of the Democracy Collaborative and of the Institute for Policy Studies. A former fellow of Harvard's Institute of Politics and of King's College, Cambridge University. In an earlier life, he also served as a legislative director in the House of Representatives and the Senate, and was a special assistant working on United Nations matters in the Department of State. His most recent books are What Then Must We Do? Straight Talk About the Next American Revolution, America Beyond Capitalism, and The Decision to Use the Atomic Bomb. Gar.
Thank you. It's an honor to follow Myra. I really enjoyed and was inspired by her comments, and some of them will interact with what I have to say. The starting point for this brief discussion, and we have only a brief time, is to suggest that we face a systemic crisis, not a political crisis. Now, we have a political crisis as well, but by arguing that it's a systemic crisis, I want to suggest to you that we need to raise back our view that the system itself is in trouble, then come back to what do you do tomorrow, starting, as Myra said, at your her mother started in her neighborhood block, which I think is the right way to think about it. But how do you think of it as a systemic crisis? Let me put it this way. I'll read you just a few statistics. This is OECD data. The United States ranks 33rd out of 36 in income inequality among world nations, 36 out of 36th in the poverty rate, 33 out of 36 in child poverty, 33 out of 37 in infant mortality, 33 out of 36 in maternal mortality, 32 out of 35 in violence against women, 37 out of 37 in health expenditures as a percentage of GDP, 31 out of 36th in trade union density, 28 out of 37 in life expectancy, et cetera, et cetera, 36 out of 36 in prison population, 36 out of 7 in greenhouse gases. I can go on. We don't like to face these kinds of numbers directly. But what I want to suggest to you is that they suggest not simply a political crisis. Those numbers of that kind are much deeper than politics as usual. And I worked as a legislative director in both the House and the Senate. We didn't actually face these large questions. They are systemic measures. Something is going wrong in the systemic design. That's very hard for most people to grapple with. What does it mean? We know that we live in this capitalist society. What we know about state socialism, at least the Soviet kind, is not very appealing. But the notion that there's a systemic crisis, not simply a political crisis, it might be expressed this way. At one point, and I worked on the liberal side of the aisle, legislative director as a liberal senator and congressman, the idea was, and there's a great literature on this, that in the Scandinavian countries, if you built up strong labor unions as institutions, up to 80% of the labor force was organized, you might thereby build a political force which could deal with environment and equality and other matters as part of the balance with corporations in our capitalist systems. In the United States, labor unions as a countervailing force, John Kenneth Galbraith's term, were never more than 34% compared to the Scandinavian 80%. Bernie Sanders talks about Denmark as his model. 80% of the labor force at one point organized. we are now down not to 34%, our peak. We are at 6% and declining. If you add in a few teachers and public employees, you get to just under 11%. So the whole balance in the system institutionally has disintegrated. And most people aren't aware of this. So if you ask about the long, long trends, the United States now ranks 33rd out of 36th in income inequality, 36 out of six in world, 36 out of 36 in poverty rate, 33 out of 36, et cetera, going down. And most people ask, how do you face a systemic crisis or an institutional crisis when everyday life is about interactions between individuals and their workplace and their family and their neighborhood? And yet we need to back off and ask this. And then we need to face the problem that none of the great systems have done much better. We certainly aren't interested in state socialism or the Soviet model or the fascist model. But if the political economy of our model is disintegrating, what then? There is some hope on the horizon. And this is the work we've been doing, many people have been doing, but we've been doing at the Democracy Collaborative. And the work begins with the idea and the practicality of new community building institutions that suggest a different direction. So let me give you an idea about what I mean by community. I'm from Racine, Wisconsin, a city of about 85,000 industrials that draw a circle around 85,000 or 40,000, or within Cleveland, where we do a lot of work, where we do work in Preston, England, draw a circle around a neighborhood of 45 to 60,000 people. In those communities where there's a really interesting experimentation, we're seeing not corporate ownership, but and not simply worker ownership. Worker ownership is a big theme amongst many progressives now, so-called ESOPs, employee stock ownership plans, or cooperative ownership. One of the problems as an element in the design of the next system, one of the interesting problems is that worker ownership in a market is forced to pollute the environment because it must externalize the costs in competition with others. Where we're seeing community ownership, think of municipal, but more importantly, neighborhood ownership, about which there's a lot of examples. If a neighborhood owns a business, it must decide whether it wants to pollute itself. It internalizes externalities. Well, just beneath the surface, there's a huge, great amount of experimentation on new forms of ownership, not state ownership, not corporate, not simply individual entrepreneur, but some form of inclusive community structure. The most powerful ones, as I say, in the United States are in Cleveland and in England, Preston. In a larger scale, during the New Deal, before it was cut short by World War II, the notion of regional ownership is the Tennessee Valley Authority, one of the largest public enterprises dealing with environment, economic development, community development in the region of seven states in the Tennessee River Valley. So models that take you to beginning at the local level and start asking, how would we rebuild this community as a community, and thereby also empowering the community politically? That kind of modeling is happening in many, many, many parts of the world. And in particularly here in this country, we've seen many models. At the same time, and think this way, how do you build forward over the next 25, 30 years? How do you get to the place where the New Deal was? All the prehistory of the New Deal was 25 or 30 years of work and longer. What is the prehistory, our time in history, laying down new models, new experiments? Just under the surface, that's what's really happening. Secondly, at a very, very different level, there's a whole theoretical debate about what's called the next system. Again, if you don't like the way corporate capitalism is producing very bad ecological and income inequality and racial trends, and you certainly don't like what happened in the Soviet Union and state socialism, what other models might there be even in theory? Well, there's a whole debate going on. We've had conferences at Harvard and Yale and at the West Coast and University of California, all over the and in Britain, number of conferences, and there's a huge debate going on what do you like, if you don't like corporate capitalism and you don't like the outcome results, and you don't like state socialism, you don't like the outcome results, what do the models look like? And so in a sophisticated way, my colleague and co-chair with me of what we call the Next System Problem Project, Gus Speth, who was formerly a professor at Yale and also the head of the environmental protection agencies in the Carter administration, we've just developed and published a book on this subject of many, many essays beginning a debate, like the debate at the beginning of the Constitutional Convention, about what does the constitution of the good society look like. And the most important single element, I think, in that is the notion of community as a structure, not just as an abstraction. So, for instance, in Youngstown in Ohio, or Cleveland, Ohio, or in Preston, England, a community as a whole that may own industry, and there are many like them that do, jointly with workers in particular factories, can choose to pollute itself if it wants to, as opposed to an individual private corporation, which has every incentive, because it saved money, to pollute externally. Whereas a community, if it pollutes externally, it pollutes itself. The technical term we economists use, it can internalize externalities. So we're seeing a lot of experimentation with community ownership. Very practical things in these cities where several hundred workers and the city or the neighborhood begin owning businesses, begin hiring people, begin dealing with their own environmental problems, begin dealing with questions of equity and child care in a community neighborhood very practical way, starting, as you mentioned, Myra, and your mother mentioned, on the block, and beginning to deal very practically in that way. But also simultaneously, and we've had conferences now at Harvard and MIT and the University of California, theoretically, what does the structure of the next system look like if you start with a vision of community? Or if you start other visions, competing visions, how do we have a sophisticated debate, like the debates at the time of the Constitution, about how do you structure the Constitution of the United States? How do you structure a whole political economy of a new republic, a republic? Well, where do we go next in the new century? Where will we be over time as we build forward, getting out of the difficulties we now are in and getting out of the collapsing labor institutional base of what's called social democracy? But without labor, you have only corporate power as the dominant institutional power. That debate is underway at many, many parts of the country and amongst activists and in Britain and other countries. And so a good deal of that is happening. So standing back from the current time, what's interesting is assessing the difficulties of the country as these income distribution numbers, climate numbers, and others demonstrate the trends are not going in the right direction. The institutional trends are not as well. And they pose a question, how do you think through what does the next system look like practically, not abstractly, and what kinds of steps can you do experimentally? And just under the surface of kind of most public reporting, there's a huge amount going on in this country in just both of those realms. Theoretically debating, where do we go next? You don't like the old models. And if the old institutions are fading, can we build up experimental models? And so we're seeing a huge amount of that going on, and it gives me great, great hope. But standing back, I'm a historian. You don't play this game without throwing 2 to 3 decades of your life on the table. This is long-term developmental process, the kind of thing that the women's movement showed over 10, decade after decade and decade after decade until it achieved power. The same as the civil rights movement, decade after decade and decade until it made impact. The same as the labor movement, decade after decade. So standing back as a historian or a citizen, the experiments on the ground are very exciting in many communities, lots and lots of practicality. There's a wonderful theoretical debate in many parts of the country, in many parts of the world, beyond capitalism and socialism or state socialism, and also congressional activities, starting many projects and financing projects around the country and around the world. I see this as a very difficult time, but also one where there's great hope about both the intellectual and the experimental side. So finally, what I see also, and this is probably the most difficult thing for most people, the age of folks on this panel particularly, but I'm seeing it in the younger students we work with and in the activist community we work with and in the theoreticians, the young academics. if you don't like what's happened with corporate capitalism, particularly as the countervailing labor union balancing is disintegrated in the United States to, as I said, a mere 6% of the labor force in the private sector, not 85% as in Sweden. And if you don't like state socialism, there is a genuine intellectual problem. What do you want theoretically? And that debate is flourishing and beginning to debate, what does it look like to organize a whole system in a way different from the models we knew in the 20th century? And simultaneously, the experimental work that's going on and the activist work, beginning with community as a shaping form, as a modeling form to build forward in kind of converging with the intellectual debate. So I think these two trends, which have very little publicity with the press, but are very, very active if you dig into what's going on at a slightly different level, are very exciting to someone like me who wears a hat as a historian and a political economist, because that's what you saw in the women's movement, things that were not publicized for 20 years and then began to flourish. That's what you saw in the civil rights movement, things that no one saw because they weren't publicized until they built to a stage of really an impactful power. And that's what you saw in the debates at the Constitutional Convention, highly intellectual debates about how you design a system and make groundwork for going forward. So with that kind of very brief sketch of the 800-page book I'm trying to write, I think there's hope, even in the moments of difficulty, the stalemates in the Senate, the stalemates in the Congress, the income distribution decay, the climate crisis. At a different level entirely, there is a slow and steady buildup of institutions and ideas that gives me some hope about the transformative possibilities of the emerging era. One last thing, the technology is now extraordinarily permissive. We are moving to a place where the technology, if we can get our systemic designs correct, we can get down to the idea of a 20-hour week or a 10-hour week at incomes of average 100 or 200,000 per family. That's possible and practical, or much less if we want to control to 100,000 in a 5 and 6 hour week over the next 50 years. That's within the range of the technology. So we are on the verge of societies, particularly in the United States, which could be almost utopian in their capacities. Technologically, we're there already. We're on the verge of that. The issue is now institutionally. And at the center of all this, I think, are institutions that begin with the inclusive idea, essentially the idea of community, not only as a theory, not only as an emotion, but beginning to build the idea of community in neighborhoods, in cities, in regions, and structurally designing them, as I say, from the neighborhood ownerships, municipal ownership, joint worker community ownership. The regional Tennessee Valley Authority is a regional form that we've experimented with. And that kind of experimentation and debate about it, I think, is the emerging direction. So I'm cautiously pessimistic about immediate politics, having worked in the House and running House and Senate staffs. But I'm quite optimistic about a long and development process. The price of this, of course, is the chips you have to throw on the table to play this game are decades of your life. And that's the nature of the problem. But I see many, many young people doing just that, saying we're committed for the long haul. There will be some short-term gains, but ultimately there's a long process at work. But there's hope in the technology and the experimentation and in the moral changes that are developing both in this country and in many places abroad around essentially ideas of we're all in it together, which is another way to say community. So let me leave it at that. That's kind of a short version of the long book I'm writing, but that'll be a start.